This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, July 3rd. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, we'll take a look at Hyde Park in Chicago and how that helped make Barack Obama's career. We'll also get a forecast for the holiday weekend from meteorologist Ed Keyser. First, today's news. Illinois lawmakers are bracing for 2 days of special sessions next week. But as Jenna Dooley reports, some legislators fear disagreements at the Capitol could make for an even longer summer.
Lawmakers are expected back in Springfield next Wednesday and Thursday. They're being told by Governor Blagojevich to retool the budget and discuss a statewide construction package. Petersburg Republican Representative Rich Brower says those tasks will take time, especially if there's fighting among the state's leaders.
Well, I think the governor certainly has an agenda, and I'm not sure that it matches with the speaker. So if that doesn't really come into balance, I think we could be in for a long time.
Last year, Governor Blagojevich called numerous special sessions when lawmakers couldn't agree on a state budget. If a similar impasse continues, the state's comptroller says Illinois will not be able to keep up with its payments, threatening checks to vendors and employees, as well as state services. I'm Jenna Dooley.
The Illinois Clean Coal Review Board has voted to fund 3 new studies to show the viability of Mattoon's future gen plant. In a meeting in Carbondale, the board voted to use $2 million previously earmarked for FutureGen to pay for the studies. They are intended to show how FutureGen could burn coal cleanly, convert coal into a synthetic gas for use in petroleum products, and to develop a plant operating strategy. John Mead of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale says data from those studies will not only be critical for FutureGen, but will also be useful for other coal-based projects down the line.
Because they're looking at some alternative approaches in terms of what kind of gasification would be done. Ultimately, they'll select one. But in the meantime, we're getting the advantage of engineering look at some alternatives and what are some of the cost factors.
The Clean Coal Review Board was set up by SIU to oversee grant money for coal research from Commonwealth Edison. The panel hopes to have the studies completed by next April for submission to the next presidential administration. The FutureGen Alliance selected Mattoon as the best site for the facility last December, only to have the U.S. Department of Energy pull the plug on the effort a few weeks later. A state senator says the Illinois Department of Corrections has missed a deadline to file paperwork outlining its plan to close the aging Pontiac Correctional Center. State Senator Dan Rutherford says the agency knew a month and a half ago that it needed to file the papers to comply with a state law governing the closure or move of state facilities. The Corrections Department blames the error on budget gridlock in Springfield and has asked for a 2-week extension on the report. The agency proposed closing the maximum security facility after it shelved plans to shutter a similar unit in Joliet. Some have questioned whether it's political payback by Governor Blagojevich's administration for lawmakers who supported a failed recall measure aimed at the governor. A University of Illinois facility that improves the safety and cost-effectiveness of roads and highways across the state is getting a funding boost. Since it opened 3 years ago, the Illinois Center for Transportation in Rantoul has taken part in more than 60 projects, ranging from making stronger pavement from recycled materials to better lighting in construction zones. Illinois' Department of Transportation announced that it's committing $15 million to ICT over 3 years. That's a 70% increase over the previous agreement. Director Imad Al-Qadi says the intent of the work is not only safety, but cost savings. He says that's the case with a plan to evaluate short-span bridges, some of them about 70 years old.
So the university helped in this case by using some advanced technology that will allow us to see the bridge decks without taking any cores or making any damage to the bridge and see if these bridges are still having integrity and structural capacity to withstand the load that it's applied to it.
ICT is also conducting less expensive research on major roadways, including a survey to look for bridge flaws on the Dan Ryan Expressway. Al-Qadi says uncertainty over the state budget should not be a concern because IDOT receives most of the $15 million from the federal government with the intent of conducting road research. 55 U of I graduate students will participate in those projects. If Illinois' junior senator wins the presidential election this fall, the senior senator hopes the governor carefully weighs his choices before selecting a successor. One option for Rob Blagojevich is to pick himself to succeed Barack Obama in the Senate. Earlier this week, Blagojevich refused to discount that option. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says the governor should pick someone else.
I would just tell him to take a look at history, though, and as you look at various states around the nation, that usually doesn't sit too well with voters in the next election.
Durbin singled out former Minnesota Governor Wendell Anderson, who selected himself to succeed Vice President Walter Mondale in the Senate 32 years ago. The political backlash resulted in a Republican takeover of Minnesota's congressional delegation in 1978. Among those thought to be on the governor's shortlist to succeed Obama are Jesse Jackson Jr. and Jan Schakowsky from Congress, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Comptroller Dan Hines, and Veterans Affairs Chief Tammy Duckworth. A groundbreaking ceremony was held yesterday in Savoy for a new memorial for the village's veterans. Village Trustee Bill Smith says he helped launch the drive to build the Veterans Memorial because he saw similar memorials in other towns and felt Savoy should have one too. An Air Force veteran himself, Smith says he thinks local veterans will appreciate the project when it's completed in the fall.
I think veterans, a lot of them are pretty quiet about what they've done and what they're currently doing, but I think those individuals are very appreciative of what we're doing here on their behalf. I really do.
The memorial has black granite markers for each branch of the armed forces and is being built in front of the Savoy Municipal Building. Smith says the project is being built with private money. He says they've raised about two-thirds of the approximately $15,000 needed, but he says supporters have made other donations in the forms of materials and labor. An official dedication is scheduled for Veterans Day. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. For quite a while now, reporters and political opponents have been dissecting Illinois Senator Barack Obama's career, analyzing exactly what made his meteoric rise possible. People have picked through his voting records, who he selected as political mentors, which law firm he chose to work for. Today, we get a look at one of the first and most basic decisions that Obama made to get his start, which Chicago neighborhood to move to. Many Chicagoans know his neighborhood of Hyde Park has a special niche in the city, its history, and its politics. Illinois Public Radio's Ben Calhoun reports on how Hyde Park helped make Obama.
I'm standing at 5429 South Harper Avenue. I'm outside of this three-story brick apartment building. This is the building where Barack Obama lived when he was a community organizer here back in the late 1980s. This is on the eastern edge of Chicago's Hyde Park neighborhood. Of course, after he lived here, he went to Harvard Law and then came back with plans to get into politics. In 1992, he married Michelle Robinson, and the couple was faced with the decision of where to move and build Obama's political career. Out of all the places they could have picked, they ended up settling on a condo about five blocks east of here, where they lived until 2005.
It was to his advantage that he started in Hyde Park.
Timuel Black is a Chicago historian and educator. For decades, he's lived in Kenwood, the neighborhood just north of Hyde Park. Black is also a friend of Obama's and occasionally advised him when he was getting started. Black says from the beginning, Hyde Park and Obama were a match. On one side, you had one of the most unique neighborhoods in the city.
Liberal, intellectual, and active.
In a city that's one of the most racially segregated in the nation, Hyde Park is integrated, a good fit for Obama's complex mixed-race background. In a city of blue-collar credentials, Hyde Park revolves around the University of Chicago, a good fit for Obama's Harvard Law intellectual background. In a city dominated by machine-style politics, Hyde Park has a history of electing independents, appealing to Obama, who made an effort to keep his distance from the city's political machine. Black says, then you had Obama's appeal to the neighborhood.
He had the education, style, charisma, a beautiful wife who was with him and had grown up not necessarily in Hyde Park, but close to Hyde Park, but having friends all over Hyde Park. And he had ambition, and he was relatively young.
Black says the neighborhood was also more understanding about some things that might have been problems for Obama in other parts of the city, like that he's not a Chicago native and he could be viewed as highbrow intellectual. Do you think a candidate like a Barack Obama, a part-time law professor at the University of Chicago, could have gotten his start in any other area of the city?
I seriously doubt whether he could have progressed even to the point of running for state senate in any other part of the city.
It would have been a lot harder, and it would have been a lot slower.
Abner Mikva is a former federal judge, White House counsel, congressman, and a longtime Hyde Park resident. He's also a friend and advisor of Obama.
It was a natural for him to settle here. First of all, the fact that he was an outsider caused no problems for him at all. They couldn't care less that he'd been here 3 months or 30 years.
In 1996, Obama won a state Senate district that's anchored by Hyde Park. And in the following years, he learned the political strengths and weaknesses of the neighborhood. In 2000, he faced the limitations of his neighborhood support when he launched a doomed bid against Congressman Bobby Rush, performing dismally outside of Hyde Park. Later, he took advantage of his independent Hyde Park base. Mikva says it was part of what allowed him to rise so rapidly and part of what put him in position for his 2004 Senate run.
He was able to leap ahead in Democratic Party circles, even though he wasn't going the regular route of being a precinct captain and running for the city council and then the state legislature and then 20 years later for the Congress and then 10 years later, if he's lucky, for the Senate. He's leapfrogged all those places because it is Hyde Park. He has a base independent of the party apparatus.
Since he catapulted to the national level, Obama's relationship with the neighborhood has changed, especially with some of the people who helped him get his start. He's still very popular in Hyde Park, but behind closed doors and not for attribution, some local leaders will tell you, after his primary win for U.S. Senate, Obama cut ties with some of his early supporters in ways that left some sour feelings. There's also a notable split among Hyde Park supporters who were there at the beginning and watched Obama's climb.
Okay, my name is Alan Mora Dobry.
I'm Lois Friedberg Dobry.
Alan Dobry and Lois Friedberg Dobry have lived in Hyde Park since the 1950s. They're prominent political activists in the neighborhood and longtime grassroots organizers. Alan Dobry was a Democratic Party committeeman in Hyde Park for 16 years. In 1996, Obama ensured his primary win for state Senate by challenging all his opponents' nominating petitions, knocking them all off the ballot. The Dobrys helped him do it.
We were able to show that all these petitions had very serious errors.
But these days, the Dobrys take slightly different views on Obama. Both still support him. But as Obama has risen to national prominence, on the local level, he's allied himself more closely with the city's political machine, including an endorsement of Chicago Mayor Richard Daley. That bothers Allen, who says it goes against Obama's Hyde Park roots.
We got him elected as an anti-machine independent, and he has now cozied up to the machine. That doesn't mean I'm going to vote Republican or work for the Republicans, but I'm less enthusiastic about Barack than when I saw him as an anti-machine independent.
Lois says she doesn't like seeing Obama ally himself with the political forces Hyde Park traditionally fought, but she understands it.
I still look at, you know, the way he votes. The way he votes in the Senate hasn't changed measurably. He's been a legislator for 13 years. I don't see that he has changed his basic agenda, but I do see that he has looked at the ways of implementing that agenda and has learned what you have to do to get some of it through.
I asked historian Timuel Black what he thought of the Dobrys' differences of opinion. He says it doesn't surprise him because Alan is a purist and Lois is a realist. Black says he understands both sides and he's heard that debate among Hyde Parkers before. Ultimately, he says he wonders how Hyde Park's values might be reflected in an Obama administration, especially since Obama wouldn't be where he is without Hyde Park. I'm Ben Calhoun.
Once we make it through a gray day here in central Illinois, meteorologist Ed Kieser says the 4th of July weekend, by and large, should shape up pretty nicely. The forecast for today for northern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny. In northern Indiana, mostly cloudy with a few scattered showers early, then becoming partly sunny. But for central and southern sections of the two states, still mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. And highs today from near 70 near Lake Michigan to 85 in the far south. The high today in Champaign-Urbana, 78 degrees. For tonight, in northern Illinois and far northern Indiana, partly cloudy. In central sections, mostly cloudy with a few lingering scattered showers. And in the south, cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. Lows from 54 north to 66 far south, 60 in Champaign-Urbana with a few showers. And for tomorrow, in the northern a third of the two states, mostly sunny. In central sections, a mix of clouds and sun with a few scattered showers for the fourth. In the south, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. Highs from 72 near Lake Michigan to 82 in the south, 77 in Champaign-Urbana, with hazy sunshine, a chance of a few passing showers. For tomorrow night, though, gradual clearing around central Illinois, the low of around 57, and then sunny for Saturday and Sunday, weekend highs 82 on Saturday, and Sunday's high 88. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, July 3rd. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.